Hello and welcome to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture, with me, Owen Wainhouse.
My name is James Gitoho. I'm an architect. I trained in Nairobi University, and I joined Triad in 1981. It's been my only employer. And I've been a director since 1988.
Yeah, I'm Charles Ndungu, and I joined Triad in 1995 after graduating from University of Nairobi. And just like James, you know, this is my first and only employer. And I became a director in 2003.
You're listening to Architecture Masters, the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. On the programme this week, we speak to the architects James Gichoho and Charles Ndumu, directors at the Kenyan architecture firm Triad Architects. The practice was founded by New Zealander Amos Connell with Scotsman Graham McCulloch in 1963. Connell travelled to England in 1924 and later studied at the British School at Rome. He later went on to establish one of the most influential but short-lived modernist British architecture practices of the 20th century, Connell, Ward and Lucas. After the war, Connell moved to Tanganyika, now Tanzania, and later to Nairobi. Connell was invited to design the Kenyan Parliament building in 1963, and won the RIBA Bronze Medal in 1964 for the Aga Khan Hospital. Triad Architects has a wide portfolio of work across Kenya, but also further afield in East Africa, in Uganda, Tanzania and Rwanda. James trained at Nairobi University and joined Triad in 1981, going on to become a director in 1988, whilst Charles joined in 1995, after also studying at Nairobi University. He went on to become a director in 2003. Practice has since worked with many foreign firms, including with John McCaslin and Partners on Kericho Cathedral, and with Squire and Partners on the British Council's offices in Nairobi. Following the retirement of the last non-native director, Tim Volkard, in 2013, the practice is now run entirely by Kenyan directors. I joined James and Charles at the office where the practice has been based since 1965, where I started by asking Charles about the size of Triad Architects today.
How many architects work for the firm now?
Well, we are a firm of, in total staff, about 35, okay. Out of which about 25 are technical staff. The number of architects normally ranges between hovers around 15, yeah. Give or take. We have a few interior designers, okay. Quite a number of technicians, and also in the recent past, you know, the construction management.
Okay.
So we have a few construction managers who are with us.
Makes you, I guess, then one of the largest architecture firms in Kenya.
I think certainly amongst the largest three, I would say. Mm-hmm. Of course, the industry is growing, and there are other upcoming firms. But I think we are amongst the largest three, okay. in the country and in the region.
And then I was interested. The practice was founded by someone who wasn't Kenyan.
Yeah.
Maybe say a few words about the beginnings of the practice and how it came to.
Interesting, and we pride ourselves for that because it's probably the only firm that has grown from pre-independence through independence and to date. And we have an unwritten policy on succession planning, and that's why we are here as directors. This is a first board where we don't have a non-Kenyan as a director. Our last director, Tim Volkard, who's retired 5 years ago, was the last, but he was here right at the beginning. Mm. It was founded by one gentleman, Amos Connell, and he moved to Nairobi from Tanga in Dar es Salaam, where his father was a farmer, a sisal farmer. And so whilst he was there, they used to build houses for the staff. Then as he grew up, he was sent to school, did architecture, came back. And then at pre-independence, just before independence, this is 1963, when most African countries were now getting their independence, there was more work in Nairobi. So they moved into Nairobi and established this farm. Three of them. The other one was, and he, Emmis Connor, actually won a bronze medal in 1963. RIBA bronze medal in 1963 for the Aga Khan Hospital, one of the good prestigious buildings.
Awesome. And I guess the other building he's known for is the Parliament building.
And of course, the Parliament is a flagship for this. For our company, because not only is a parliament current, he did the first chamber, then after independence, the second chamber. What you see parliament today is what Emmis Connor designed and built, and the Attorney General's offices as well. Same tradition and very nice. Subsequent to that, in 1975, the company... because of international trade changes in laws and transfer of remittances of profits, they decided to establish local firms. Now, Triad, interestingly to note, Emmis Connor formed Triad in Nairobi, but it was the international base for Nairobi, Kampala, Tel Aviv, Oman, and London.
Okay.
And that was quite an ambitious program.
So really working internationally from Nairobi.
From Nairobi. So 75 is because of those changes in monetary policies across countries.
Yeah.
Then they decided to dismantle the international setup and create indigenous companies within the countries they were operating.
Okay.
And also the partnership now almost split in those regions. Yeah. Okay. So Emmis Connor, who was here, moved back to London.
Yeah.
David Bristow, who used to be in London, a much younger partner, came to Kenya to run the Kenya and Uganda studios. Yeah. Offices.
Okay.
Yeah. And so what you see today was created in 63, then...
From this office?
From this office.
Okay.
They moved here in 1965.
Right. So it's a real history to
the building. It was a single-story building, but it's been expanded over time. Yeah, and we've grown.
I mean, that's fascinating in that actually architects in London rarely get to stay in their own building. They get priced out and they have to move to different parts of the the city.
Yeah.
And so that evolution then, that kind of succession planning, that's... at what stage did they start employing Kenyan architects, rather?
I think David had a vision of knowing that it's not sustainable to continue as a foreign firm.
Yeah.
So his first task was to look for young Kenyan architects to join the practice. And he was committed to that.
Okay.
So when he came here in 75 from out of London, he found Tim Vockard, who was just retired, as a young VSO
voluntary services,
working here. So he recruited him, and then he recruited late Daniel Motiso, who was had just graduated and working with the railways.
Okay.
So he built them up to be the middle management of the firm, and eventually admitted them as directors.
Okay.
And the rest is history. Because I joined in 81, I joined as... There were other architects, and there were many expatriates in those days.
Yeah.
But as it evolved, I was the next... When David decided he's retiring, they needed to recruit additional directors.
Okay.
And that's how I joined. as a director.
So
that policy has continued.
Okay.
We are always four generations. You know, we are a partnership of four people.
Okay.
And we all belong to a different generational age.
Okay.
Which I think, to me, for architecture, is very sustainable because then you are you remain relevant.
Yeah.
to the trends and aspirations of your clients. Yeah.
So I'll come on to Charles in a minute, but both of you studied at University of Nairobi.
Yes,
so where I was this morning talking to Tom. So what led to you becoming an architect? You know, how did you decide?
Let Charles go first.
Okay, so Charles first. So you
I think architecture then in high school.
Yeah.
So
you were born
in Nairobi.
Okay.
I grew up in the eastern side, eastland suburbs of Nairobi. I went to one of I would say the better high schools, Lenana School. As I recall it now, what used to happen is there were what we called like the cliche.
Yeah.
Or the top professions, which was medicine, law, and architecture,
and architecture, right?
At least then, as we saw it,
yeah.
And then engineering came
a bit below.
That's
what we like to hear.
Yeah. I mean that's what. And also I think it was also that kind of rating came about because of the admission, the pass marks. They had the courses or the professions to be admitted in the university, in the public universities.
Okay.
Then there were not a lot of private universities
when
we grew up, even certainly James's time. So it was really public universities, and there was only one school of architecture.
Which was Nairobi.
Which was Nairobi University. Yeah. to get into certain courses, you have to have certain marks.
Yeah.
And those three were the top marks, the ones with the highest admission marks. So that, I think, also elevated the courses to be, seen as the best.
Prestigious.
I ended up in architecture because, I didn't think medicine was for me. I never liked biology and all that. I was not a linguistic, literally person. So law was seen as more aligned to the arts.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wasn't. Naturally, architecture was my first choice. I think when we went to, we then thought, I don't know about James, but we thought architecture was really almost like engineering, a scientific course.
Yeah.
So when we went to college, we were quite shocked because, we started with the art. We started there with no sciences. I think the structural or sciences part, traditional, were just a small portion. And we started with, with
drawing anything,
which we had not, a lot of us had...
had not done before.
Physics and chemistry and mathematics.
So quite a change into university with the arts.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, definitely.
That's really interesting, actually, because a lot of people I've spoken to, for them was the other way around, that they were, from a very young age, they were drawing and the arts.
I don't know about James, but
I wasn't cut out. I ended up in architecture purely by chance. I was brought up to be an engineer.
Right.
I think a lot of influence from my parents, and so maths, physics, chemistry was the subjects you did.
Mm. That was pushed by your parents.
And that was kind of nudged by parents. And
yeah.
It's either that or you do maths, physics, chemistry, biology to become a medical
doctor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for us who didn't like the other side of things, we did maths, physics, chemistry. So for me, I even wanted to become a mechanical engineer.
Wow. Okay.
But I went to university.
Yeah.
I was picked for architecture. I went to try and change to mechanical engineering. Oh. I queued, my impatience kicked in. I went back to architecture and I never regretted. Right. It's as simple as that. Yeah. And surprise, surprise, we started drawing.
Yeah.
And I used to like art. In high school, primary school, I was always in the art club. So for me, art wasn't a surprise, but it was not my day-to-day excitement.
Okay.
But I think the beauty about architecture is because you what you see, how where you live, it becomes a way of life.
Yeah.
Mm.
Walking around and you relate to your environment. And to me, that just resonated with my lifestyle, and that's it. We used to spend a lot of time touring.
Right.
I mean, my father worked with the East African community, so there are no holidays that we stayed at home. So you're either on the train or on the steamship in Lake Victoria, going around. And I think that probably influenced
looking at the environment and
appreciating what's going on.
Yeah.
I think that on hindsight, I think that's why I stayed.
So
5 years of training.
Hard
work and lots of fun. Yeah.
And then straight from university, employed by Triad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But again, another divine connection, I should say, because my external examiner happened to be Daniel. He was a partner here. Little did I know. I didn't know Triad when I was in university. I knew of it, but I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know where they are. But it so happened on my exam day, at the end of the studio work, I went and approached him and asked, "Sir, may I have an interview? I would like to book an interview with the Triad." And then he looked at me and said, "But you've done your interview." And so when I came here,
interviewing you whilst you
I think going back to the Bristol story I shared earlier, I think in his mind also, as he was examining these students, he was looking at potential employees.
Okay.
So for me, I never did a formal interview other than my final year exam, which happened to be the door to Triad. And I enjoyed it. I loved it. Interesting. Let's fast forward.
Yeah.
And then we can always go back.
Okay, we can come back. Yeah.
Yeah. Then we fast forward. We found a firm, and this I'm speaking on behalf of all of us now. We found a firm that had a lot of integrity.
Yeah.
We found a firm that treasured in technology and engineering and innovation. So we were the first architectural practice to embrace AutoCAD when we went computer-aided design in 1989, 90. Okay. Well, so ahead of many other firms.
Really embracing technology.
Embracing technology. And that ethos has continued. We became the first ones to get an ISO certification.
Okay.
As the buzzword of ISO certification came about.
Mm.
Then currently, we probably in the industry, we among the few that have continuously embraced new technology.
Yeah.
And now we are on the Revit platform
for
design and development.
Mm.
We have not grown very strong in interior design, but we've done interiors as part of our architectural practice as opposed to a standalone service.
Okay.
And then we have ladies who have come into the picture.
Okay.
My year, we had one girl
doing
architecture out of a class of 45.
Yeah. In university. Yeah. Is she still practicing?
She's a chief architect. Well, now she's a permanent secretary. She became almost a chief architect in government.
Wow.
So she's still practicing.
Fantastic.
And so I think Triad has evolved through innovation.
Yeah.
And innovation, not just the design aspects, but also in employment, in leveraging on technology, but most of all, remaining pure, remaining professional, and integrity is a key thing for us, even today. especially in an environment that we operate in Kenya.
Yeah, we might come on to that kind of a little bit later on. It's interesting times. But, and then the, I guess I'm interested in how the practices, I mean, as architects, you're influenced by what's around you. And I guess being founded by someone not from Kenya, I'm interested in how the practice, maybe how your work has evolved, how your work has changed. I guess the question is, do you see a fundamental difference to the work that you're doing now and the work that you were doing kind of previously? Has there been that evolution or that change?
James, probably. I mean, James worked with David quite a bit. I mean, I would say mainly technology has had a big influence in the way we work. When I joined, the computers had just come in. I actually, just going back on the, you know, how we started, I actually was employed because of, when I was in college, I did some little AutoCAD courses. And when I finished college and applied, applied formally.
So you had to have an interview here then? That was your way in?
I applied to a number of firms, and in my time, you know, the leading firms were now already, you know, known. You could see them, and Triad was
one
really
of them.
Up there. So it was obviously one of our first, most of us, our first choices.
Wanted to apply.
So I applied to Triad and two others. Okay. I was actually called for interviews by all of them. And offered a job by one, by two, and eventually chose a Triad. But I would say technology has had a big impact from the you know, from the days before and how we're working now.
But the kind of architectural style, I mean, what's interesting, I mean, if you look at the Parliament building, you can see maybe the some of the British references there, the clock tower, as a few people talk about that as being similar to Big Ben in London. So you can see where Amas sort of took his, maybe some of his influences from. Where does your work, I mean, would you describe your buildings now as being authentically Kenyan, authentically African, in international style? Yeah, I'm just wondering where you kind of, what the, or are they all just, all the buildings you produce, are they all location
specific? Maybe the way
specific?
To look at it is, and I like your reference to the Parliament building. And remember, it's a it's in the context of an emerging new nation. From a British colony. And so a lot of British influence. You will see, and you have seen in the city as you walked around. So in the early days, in those the 60s, probably most of the buildings will have echoed what you saw coming up or had emerged from in England and Europe medieval times. So that's those influences came, and it's there's one street called Kenyatta Avenue. It's got all these protected buildings, and they're all these Gothic-looking buildings. You'll find them in South Africa because it's the same trend. You'll find them in Zimbabwe. So that influenced us. Then come independence, an emerging nation that needed a lot of investments. So it emerged that a lot of the buildings were done by aid agencies, and it will be in the hospitals, it will be in the schools, and it will be in the agricultural sector. So you'll find our brochure work in the early years. You'll find coffee warehouses. You'll find schools that are in arid zone areas, which respond to the climatic conditions of that area. You'll see a lot of buildings of agricultural sector, silos and factories on that. Before now, again in the 70s and 80s now, when the economy has grown and people are now reinvesting now into real estate, purely speculative real estate. So you start seeing the emergence of office buildings.
Right.
Because prior to that, office buildings were government buildings, were government offices. Mm. So now you start the emergence of the financial sector with buildings. So a building like us in 1984 called Corner House emerged. Mm. And it was a symbol for a financial institution. So what happens then? What is the trending material? Yeah. Glass buildings, tall buildings.
Yeah.
Almost nothing authentic in terms of Kenya.
Mm. Yeah.
Until you study them scientifically, then you realize it could only be built in a tropical country and not a European, a temperate climate.
Yeah.
Because it responds to climatic. Yeah. One thing that we experience with when we get, should I use the word foreign architects here, is the lack of response to our climatic conditions.
Yeah.
And they get surprised when we say all buildings must face north-south because we're in the equator.
Yeah.
But as in Europe, I'm sure if I went there, I'll orient my buildings badly because you want the warmth of summer from the south for yourselves. So So I think those our buildings is not so much in terms of form and shape, but more for climatic response, appropriateness to here.
Yeah.
But materials, again, you find brick being used. You may say, that's what old England, London was. That's old New York style.
Yeah.
But still, it's an appropriate material because it's available here.
Yeah. So it doesn't need to be shipped in and doesn't need to be.
But now then you come fast forward, 90s, 2000, change of materials. Serious materials that have emerged worldwide. Glass, facing materials, aluminium, aluminium panels. That has influenced architecture here.
Yeah.
And then a designing clientele who's global.
Okay, so their influences are...
They really you'll see a lot of inappropriate buildings.
Okay.
Because they are straight from a vision and an aspiration.
Straight from the internet, that people have seen influences from
outside. And they don't care. They say they'll deal with a sun gain through air conditioning.
Okay.
And we always pride ourselves. Nairobi is an air-conditioned city, notwithstanding the dust and the mosquito. But you actually don't need
Air conditioning on a well-designed building.
Well, this is the hottest
time of the year.
In the shade, it's fine.
It's fine.
Okay.
But not in the traffic jam in a car.
that's a bit different.
And
then interesting, kind of like, I guess, walking through the downtown, through the central business district, you can't help but notice Chinese construction companies. Uh-huh. Is that just about construction, or are there Chinese, are the designs being done locally? Is it just that it's cheaper to procure a building with a Chinese contractor, or...
I think it's a mishmash of various reasons. One, of course, is the Chinese have bidded their cost of production because of their management costs, principally.
Right.
Okay. And also in a number of instances, they also do procurement from China. But I think it's because of their structures.
Right.
They don't have expensive structures unlike some of them. Maybe other companies locally. Yeah.
Okay.
So because of that, they've managed to
keep the costs.
And capture a bit of the market. But I would also say it's because of also capacity and the quickness to build, so to say.
Okay.
Yeah. They have huge resources.
Yeah.
Their working cultures are very different from ours.
Yeah.
I remember when we were working with them on Garden City, mall, shopping mall, which incidentally was done in partnership with a British architect.
Right.
They worked 24/7 I mean, wow. There was no Saturday or Sunday or Monday. Sunday was as busy as Monday.
That's amazing.
And it is 7 to 7.
Yeah.
So they are able
to
get things done quickly. So I think a combination of capacity and also price has made a lot of them to. There are so many now to capture a lot of the, especially the bigger jobs. The large office buildings and malls.
At the end of the day, Chinese is a factor across the globe, isn't it? They have influenced across Northern America, Canada, Vancouver areas. They've influenced the whole of Africa. So I think it's also partly their strategy to spread out after the government changed. And then, of course, the looking for infrastructure projects more than the building projects because of their capacity. So like now, in our case in Nairobi, it's all those big Chinese companies are not here because of the office blocks they're doing. But position themselves for infrastructure work.
And they bid pretty
competitively. Again, also, we've come to realize, and we all know, it's an open secret, that they are all state-owned companies.
Okay.
So they are able to price competitively.
Because there's no dividend
return to some shareholder somewhere sitting wanting his cash in the bank. So they're able to keep costs down. And then, as Charles alluded, they're work ethos. It's just incredible. When you're out here, you're here to work, nothing else. Now, subsequent to that, they have now been allowed by their own state departments to retain some of their cash and to leverage on the equipment that they have already imported. And so they go into now private sector development. So you'll find them developing apartment blocks, homes for people, leveraging on their capacity. So again, they deliver projects in a very competitive price to the smaller indigenous investor. So they've penetrated now the market. We, at Independence, our industry, maybe this is an interesting point, our industry is predominantly the Indian community because the Indians came to Kenya with the railway line. To build the railway from Mombasa to Kampala.
It was
dismantled from India.
Yeah.
And bequeathed to another British colony called Kenya. and they assembled it from Mombasa to Kampala.
And the workers came with it. Okay.
So in the process they became the builders in this country.
And many stayed then, I guess. And that's the Indian influence in Nairobi.
And you still find a lot of them in the building industry.
And so you can see why Kenya is such a cosmopolitan, kind of all those influences coming in. But interestingly then, I guess most of the people I've spoken to who've studied architecture have at some point so far in Kenya, most of the people I've spoken to have spent some time studying overseas. Neither of you have studied overseas then. You've both studied, you did your full course in Nairobi. But then I guess the interesting thing is Triad have started doing a lot of work overseas. You know, I guess there's work across East Africa. I mean, it's interesting we talked at the beginning about Nairobi as an international base for Triad, but you're working more overseas and there's an ambition there to do more international work, is there?
There is actually, I spent 3 years of my, early years in Triad. From 1999 to 2002 in Uganda, in Kampala, Uganda.
Working for Triad.
I mean, I was posted there to run two projects, an international school. A new international school, new campus. It existed, but they have just bought this 32-acre piece of land. Okay. And we're developing a school and also an office development for CDC funded. So, yes, I mean, the region has always been one of our focus areas.
Okay.
We've also done a lot of work in Kigali.
Right,
In Rwanda.
Yeah.
Bits and pieces in Burundi.
Okay.
South Sudan.
Sudan and Somalia.
Even. Okay.
And yes, I think you cannot as a leader.
Yeah.
As we want to see ourselves.
Yeah.
In the industry.
Yeah.
I think today you cannot ignore
international markets.
The international market and initially the East African market. But I think we also have ambitions to be a leader, not only in the region, but in Africa.
Because Nairobi is seen, and certainly in East Africa, as the kind of economic powerhouse, with Addis. But the kind of influence then, I know there are South African firms kind of bidding for work across the continent. Mm. Is there much competition from South Africa?
I would say yes, there has been.
Okay.
There has been competition, but I think most of them have not been able to fully entrench themselves in the in the Kenyan market.
Yeah,
I think there are peculiarities, perhaps.
Okay.
And also their cultures.
Yeah.
So it has tended to be more of, I would say, more of one-off.
Yeah, one-off projects. One-off
projects.
Okay.
I know one or two of them have set up office.
Okay.
But not, very large offices. But again, you take it as an opportunity to learn.
Yeah.
And we've worked with a number of them.
Yeah.
From Johannesburg.
Okay.
Yes, but we don't see it necessarily as a negative thing.
No,
we would like to compete with them, and
And that's really, I mean, I'm sort of interested then in how, the number. It's a relatively small number of registered architects in the country, but growing quickly now.
Comparatively to probably other markets in other countries.
Yeah,
we probably are. Less than 1,000.
Yeah.
Oh, it's probably 1,200. If you look at that.
I mean, if you look at the registration, the board that registers architects also registers the quantity surveyors.
Okay.
So in total, they're about maybe 2,000.
Right.
From architect number one.
Yeah.
Who was the founder of Triad.
Really? Right.
Yeah, Graham McCullough. Graham McCullough is architect number one.
Number one.
001.
Yeah, that's his registration number.
late Graham, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, up to today is 2,000.
Yeah.
So,
but some of them are quantity surveyors as well.
Some are maybe a third could be quantity surveyors.
Okay.
And then many are retired.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Many are not with us.
Yeah.
Because that's since the 60s. Yeah. So probably, I would say, less than 1,000. Architects. But that number is increasing and is going to increase very fast because, you are at Kenyatta University.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
That is the third school of architecture.
Yeah.
After Nairobi, Jomo Kenyatta.
Yeah.
And then now Kenyatta.
Yeah.
So I think in the next maybe 2 or 3 years, we'll be having 200 plus graduates.
Because people have said...
Coming out of campus. So that number is going to quickly go up.
Yeah.
What are the coming years?
But there are also equal number coming from overseas, returning Kenyans.
Right, okay. Yeah. So some are still... the growing university...
Yeah, there's a lot trained outside the country.
Right.
And whereas they work there are quite a few... coming back.
Okay.
I mean, our office now, there's no distinction. There are as many that trained outside to as those who trained in our local universities.
That's...
And they are busy. I mean, if you go around, there are a lot of not mega projects, small scale apartment blocks, small office buildings, residential housing units. So, most architects have been, despite the numbers,
there's work growing, available. Growing.
Yeah. There has been work. Yeah. You know, obviously last year wasn't a good year.
And that's in the run-up to the election.
With the election, yeah. Yes.
So it's kind of quite a cyclical process.
Yes. Right. I mean, it was probably the slowest in, you know, since the early 2000.
Right,
since
then, okay.
You know, the NAC government, I don't know how well you know the history of Kenya,
yeah.
politically.
Yeah.
But since, you know, multi-partisan really, you know, caught up in 2002, it's probably one of the slowest years
right.
That we've had. But things remain positive. There are now a lot of inquiries and
coming through that coming now. Through. Now the elections are out of the way.
Yes, and, you know there's a 4 or 5 year, or is it 4.5 year window?
Okay, to get things done.
Which is so if you for those you know who want to implement projects now is the time, and there are a lot of developers who are taking the opportunity.
And increasingly, I guess private developers now. I guess originally more of the development was from the government. I guess now is more coming through.
Private, I think government is still a big employer.
Yeah.
And there are still a lot of projects in government. And then the counties now are coming up. But the private sector is I think, by, I don't know, James, but by and far, I think the private life sector is still the biggest employer. And for Triad.
Aspire for Triad. Yeah. We have been the... among the number one choice for private sector investments.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So you'll find a lot of our projects are private sector as opposed to government projects. Mm. Yeah.
So as directors, you must spend quite a lot of your time on gaining new work, on business development.
Course.
Yeah, on the golf course. if only that were true.
If only that.
But you must spend a lot of time trying to win new projects. I mean, that's the kind of... challenge for every architect at the kind of senior.
Yes, I mean architecture is unlike we say normally unlike auditors who have guaranteed work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, every year from
the same clients.
Repeat work.
For architects, you know, every year every income is a peculiar, you know, separate job that will be there next year or in 2 years' time. So job generation is an ongoing exercise, and perhaps of course, you know, execution is also critical.
So, and that's the part you enjoy. Everyone becomes an architect, I guess, because they enjoy the architecture rather than the building.
But you know, you probably spend almost equal time
on the business,
and especially now when there isn't so much work.
Yeah.
Maybe in a very busy year.
You spend more time on it.
There's a lot to execute. But in a year like this and last year, it was, you know, we call them RFPs and proposals. Yeah. And, you know, so it does take a lot of our time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the next, you say about the next generation then of architects kind of coming out of university now, you must see. Yeah, that's, you talk about the kind of succession planning again and thinking about the future of the practice. Is there a grand plan for the practice, you know, in terms of where you see it going, where you see, or are you just thinking kind of...
I think our challenge is always to remain relevant, both in terms of the desiring client, but more importantly also the trends, the technological changes
that
is directly affecting way of life. Lifestyles are changing. The X generation wants a different things. Malls are changing.
That's interesting.
Offices don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
so I think architecture is directly related with the changing trends and changing life work balance of people and where they want to live.
Yeah.
And how they want to live, and we cannot even start by saying we have an indigenous language for Kenya, because we also have become a very cosmopolitan society.
Yeah.
That and the cell phone has completely changed even people in the rural area, how they operate and behave,
yeah.
and so they have. they have so much access to information that by the time you're designing buildings, even in a rural setup, they half the time they have a good idea of what they're looking for.
So
you'll find...
It's interesting, yeah.
Emerging trends that are more international and universal than traditional and authentic local. So it boils down to the basics. Materials, response to topography, geographical location, and response to climate.
And then the aspirations of the user. That's fascinating how that people talk about design, you know, the online kind of publication about people seeing their, I guess once, not that long ago, people's influences, they saw other buildings in their own city, maybe in neighbouring cities, and thought maybe that's how I might want to live. I guess now, and Kenya's developed this reputation for, as you were saying, about being very, you know, the kind of Silicon Savannah and being very technology. I guess that means people are seeing buildings from around the world, and that cosmopolitan influence is interesting in terms of how people want to live. And the change, I mean, the kind of how people live, there's obviously a huge housing crisis in London at the moment. But the way people live here, is that people moving to apartments increasingly? What's the kind of trend there in terms of, we talked a little bit about office changes to offices, but changes to how people want to live in terms of their homes. Is there a trend?
I think, the apartment has become a big thing. And it's also driven, has been driven by, costs. And also issues of people wanting to live in maybe perhaps a secure environment. There are a lot. There are people, especially the younger and then people, generation, and also ladies, who feel that apartments are safer. But the apartment is becoming very, it's basically accepted as a way of life here. But again, it's driven, they're driven by pricing and land prices. Land prices have meant that you have to...
To build up. Okay.
Because prices in Nairobi have, in the last 15 years, I don't know, maybe it's, I think, 10 times. they've gone up 10 times. Price of land.
Okay.
So the effect on that, on the cost of housing, has been, tremendous.
Okay.
And the days when you could have affordable residential townhouses or maisonettes in Nairobi, it's kind of gone.
Yeah.
It's kind of gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
To get those kind of units now, you have to maybe go a bit further out of town.
Yeah.
Unless you're very,
very wealthy,
then there are areas where you can still get
land,
half acre or maybe quarter acre properties.
Yeah,
but for most of Nairobi, apartments are
I think it's urbanization.
Like
that's, trend world over.
Yeah,
there's rural to urban migration, putting pressure on home requirements. It's coupled by transport system that is not very efficient. Then it's complicated by available resources in terms of services, in terms of schools and medical services. So it's just concentrating people in towns.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, Nairobi, it was one thing, everybody wanting a piece of a townhouse with a piece of land, to now an apartment that is not more than 4 stories.
Right.
To now 10 stories. Now we're seeing 20-story apartments coming up. And it's not outsiders. It's not expatriates who are living in them. It's Kenyans.
And
who,
a change in demand, really, from internally.
I think that the affluent will still have his rural home.
Yeah.
Country home somewhere,
but also wants a flat.
He still wants a convenient place of accommodation that is close to the other facilities. The emerging trends of shopping malls.
Yeah.
We used to shop in the market.
Yeah.
Now we shop in the shopping mall.
Yeah.
Or the down the street corner shop, you know?
Yeah.
But that also has changed. Mm. We used to travel up in the rural area and come back with vegetables.
Yeah.
And we never needed to go to the supermarket for vegetables.
Yeah.
Now we buy them from the supermarket for vegetables. So I think those changing trends have happened.
And changing the demand then for your work. So part of your work is residential, is it? It's a mix of some, we've talked about the kind of, is it?
I would say quite a bit.
But we tend to do everything, don't we?
But a big portion. I mean, maybe 30-40. I mean, we have quite a number of residential.
Okay. But that's interesting then. You say that you do everything. You know, a lot of practices get nailed down as doing just a niche. So some practices in the UK are really well known for small-scale housing or for commercial work or universities. But
I think when you have a big economy, you tend, and also developing specific areas, even the firms here, they may be known for certain niches.
Yeah.
Like Symbion will be known for hotels because in their time they probably did quite a bit of hotels. We'll be known for institutional buildings, and schools and colleges, because there's a time when we did a lot of that development work. You know, so you get known for specific areas because you've done more of that.
Yeah.
But every firm that is practicing here has done a bit of everything.
Okay.
And remember also, Nairobi being what it is, it's the hub for East Africa.
Yeah.
So you find, and also schools of architecture didn't exist elsewhere. So you find the Kenyans going
across the region,
across the border.
Yeah.
To do work there. And so there will be a new, like Charles said, there's a new school in Kampala.
Yeah.
Only one architect will do it. And chances are he'll have come out of Nairobi.
Yeah.
Yeah. you go to, we've done sad projects, but we've done them. Genocide memorial parks.
In Rwanda.
Three of them.
Oh, wow.
In Rwanda.
Yeah.
I mean, that happened because we had an office in Rwanda and we were doing some good work in Rwanda.
Yeah.
And
people know the name and then respect
and,
the...
And you hear it
and
you respond to it more emotionally than an architect.
Yeah.
And before you know it, you're doing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And touch wood, you not do it again.
That's one project.
That will only happen in a particular lifetime. Right now, the East African integration is going on.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
So all these border control stations are being built.
Yeah.
So you end up picking one or two or three of them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Border posts.
I can see... 20 years from today, it will be like Europe, where they will all become redundant and demolished because there will be free movement of people.
Across East
and
Africa,
so you don't need that infrastructure.
Yeah. Mm. Well, let's hope you won't turn into Britain and start putting them back up again. Yes.
destroying
learn from our mistakes.
Good.
Yeah. Are you going backwards? Or are you?
We are going backwards. It's really.
It seems like.
And in America, I mean, we're both Britain and America seem to have gone through this kind of crazy
cycle.
Couple of years.
Yeah.
And hopefully it'll sort itself out.
Yeah.
But don't make our mistakes. That's been a real fascinating run through of your work. I'm really, really grateful.
Yeah.
And it seems to me there's a real, and say we were talking to Nairobi Design Week about the increasing appreciation in Kenya for design more broadly now, and I guess with more architects coming through the universities and more people concentrating on design, the impression as an outsider seems to be the moment is coming for the profession. I mean, it sounds hugely optimistic, the future of architecture in Kenya.
And it's not only architecture, it's the whole window of arts and appreciation of arts. And it was there, early, and then it died off. Mm. Even the universities, you remember, there was a lot of drama and theatre. Then it seems to become more political, then it died.
Yeah.
Now again, there's an emerging awareness on arts, music, plays, theatre, spoken word. And architecture finds itself in that space.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And it's you don't see it, but when you go looking for it, you find young artists, young musicians, and then technology has set in, so video clips and stuff like that being created.
Wider culture.
So that all of that has come now center stage, rather than the traditional engineer, traditional medicine, traditional lawyer. There's a whole new young professionals emerging from that side of the arts. Yeah.
Hugely exciting to be part of it. Fantastic.
We just need to reflect it in our built environment, because it is coupled by the degradation of our environment with all the filth and the polluted rivers and streets. But we pride ourselves in the last 3 months when plastic paper was abolished.
The bags have gone.
And it's amazing how quickly
things can change.
Yeah. Things changed and visibly changed, even in our places of residence.
You've been listening to Architecture Masters, a podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. On the programme this week was James Gichoho and Charles Ndugu, directors at Triad Architects. You can find out more about James and Charles and Triad Architects at architecturemasters.org, from where you can also subscribe to the programme and follow us on Twitter. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, why not leave a review or a rating in your podcast provider, as this helps others to discover the programme. You can also send any comments, questions or suggestions by email to hello@architecturemasters.org. Music for this week's episode was by Peter Lagono and Raw Music International, Kisumu Mixtape, via the Free Music Archive and released under a Creative Commons license. You've been listening to the podcast from the London Festival of Architecture. In Nairobi, I'm Owen Wainhouse. Thank you for listening.